Now, KMOX at your service. Welcome to the Gila Tech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, lunchtime home improvement. Scott Mosby at the helm. We are launching down the Mississippi River, trying to fix everything around your home, your house, your world. It is indeed one more hour of the Gila Tech Home Improvement Show. I promise to give you my very best. Bosco is my pet gerbil, right here at the right side of me. He's on the treadmill, solely responsible at times for turning out 50,000 watts to broadcast KMOX. A little bit of help, sometimes a lot of help from Ameren. We appreciate that very much as well. But Gila Tech Home Improvement Show coming to you. Bosco, Ameren, Scott, despite some of our, I don't know, maybe not best efforts, we're coming through. 314-436-7900 is how you call and become part of all of this conversation, or toll free anywhere on the planet, 800-925-1120. We had our first hour, great callers, good things. We've got some good calls right on the air I'm going to go to right away because they're really good topics. And we've got all sorts of things happening. I'm Scott Mosby. I own and operate Mosby Building Arts. It's a design, build, remodeling company. We do exclusively residential, which means homes and condos, any place you live, that's the type of thing we do. We are a full architectural firm as well as a construction company. Our claim to fame is we don't really subcontract everything. So a general contractor may only have two or three employees, and they subcontract the entire project. We self-perform as much of it as we possibly can. And that's really where, you know, if you've ever done a remodeling project yourself, the communication or lack thereof between the various teammates or subcontractors is where the project gets awry. Our answer to that is just have everybody on one team, lock us all in one room, and don't let us out till we're done. So that's kind of an oversimplification of it. But that's how Mosby Building Arts does it. Let's go to the phones and see what's cooking, and let's see what's happening here. Let's go with, how about Todd? Hey, Todd, Scott Mosby here. Thanks for your patience, and welcome to KMOX.
Hi, Scott. Yeah, I am an HVAC contractor in Illinois, and I wanted to interject a thought on...
Hey, Todd, hold on a minute. Yeah. I think your cheek's in front of the microphone. It's muffled.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. The man that had the humidity problem in the basement earlier,
yeah.
I had a couple thoughts about it. One, he says he has ductwork, but I'm kind of curious that he may not have a return air down there, which is definitely going to remove the moisture. And
which means it's not going to suck in all the air from the basement. It may have some blowout supplies, but no way to draw the air in and dry it with the unit. Yeah.
Correct. And then I thought, I was kind of concerned when he said that his basement was 77 degrees.
Yeah.
That's pretty warm, and you kind of wonder if he doesn't have some infiltration problems there.
Yeah, air leakage around the base. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, maybe around the band board, because that's a place, like in especially older homes, it can tend to from settling that, as you're well aware of.
Yeah.
But the other thing, I really wanted to back up what you said about the portable dehumidifiers. I have a newer home. These newer homes are tighter. I use a small dehumidifier, portable. The woman that had the issue with the mold in the bathroom. Totally agree with you. If you use that, it'll work.
Just dry it out faster. Don't let it grow.
Absolutely. And then the basement where that man was, you know, you can move it around the rooms. And if you buy a model that actually has a humidity reading, I always shoot for 50%.
Yeah.
Because I believe at 55 and above is where you're going to start having your mold issues.
Yep. Agreed.
So I just wanted to throw that in there. Appreciate you letting me go on and throw in a couple thoughts.
Hey, Todd, professional HVAC, you're a higher level of knowledge than I am. Welcome aboard. You're welcome anytime, man. I appreciate you having my back on this one.
No problem. You have a good day, sir.
All right. Take care. Thanks for help.
Yep, bye.
There we go. Todd is just reiterating that it matters how fast you dry things out. I was kind of... We were talking to John in hour one. He was our first caller. Should I get a portable dehumidifier for my basement and dry that out, or get a central unit put into the actual ductwork? And I I follow it. I mean, I'm tracking right there with Todd on that. There may not be enough air. Well, first off, in any house, probably if you're listening to me, your house doesn't have enough return air, which means that thing up on the wall, they're hard to find a place to do it. Generally, they're an afterthought when the house or the remodeling is installed. And I'm in a house built in the 1950s. It is woefully, poorly underserved by return air, just because that's the way it was. And you can damper things and you can put double units in it and all that stuff. But until you overcome that return air, you're just not getting the hot air in the air conditioning's hot summer. You're not getting the hot air into the furnace to let it do its thing and cool it off and spit it back out. Or in the wintertime, you're not getting that cold air into the furnace to warm it up and spit it back out and heat the house. So he was right on the track there anyway. I appreciate the help. And as far as that bathroom and the mold and the ceramic tile and all of that, think about the difference between a very humid area, and I'm going to do this geographically. So St. Louis is very humid. Florida, south, you're very closer to the equator you get. It's wet all the time because the air just got moisture hanging in it. Then you run out to Arizona and New Mexico. Some of those actual arid states that are very dry, and there's just no moisture in the air. So you may work out very hard and sweat here in St. Louis, whereas out in the arid desert area, you may never see perspiration because it evaporates so quickly because there's nothing in the air. It just immediately goes into vapor and cools the skin immediately. So anyway, keep that in mind in terms of what Todd was talking about and how quickly you can stop or diminish mold in a bathroom or a shower or a basement, areas that are common to have high humidity. All right, well, I put you to sleep enough. 314-436-7900, 436-7900. Give us a call, toll-free, 800-925-1120. We're going to get into decks here when we come back on KMOX. So much to talk about, so little time. Scott Mosby.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, back together, home improvement. I promise we've got lots of things happening here on KMOX. Don't go away, so much to talk about, and we've got some good phone lines going right here on KMOX. Let's see what's cooking here and talk to Mark. Hey, Mark, good afternoon. Welcome to lunchtime on KMOX. How can I help, sir?
Hey, Scott. Thanks for taking my call. About 5 years ago, I built a 16 by 20 womanized treated deck on 2 foot centers with the boards on top being the 2 foot stock material, you know. The wife wanted to go to a composite deck, you know, after a year or so. So mm-hmm. We tried a special coating, did the prep on it and everything, put the special coating down, had disastrous results with that, okay?
Yep.
After 2 years, it peeled up. Now, there's a new product out that one of the box stores sells. It's called Quick Cap by UltraDeck.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially what it is, it's like a half-inch board composite material, and you lay it over your existing deck, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Individuals at the box store, I had questions that they seem to not answer. I said, how do you prep? You know, because now it's my deck. I once a year, Thompson water sealer. My deck's in the backyard. I've got a beautiful maple tree that provides the shade, but I don't know if you know about maple trees. They shed leaves, they shed seed pods, and one other 3 years. So it's a constant cleaning, and the material's getting down between the grooves of the womanized material.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I asked the gentleman, I said, okay, I'll put this quick cap down, but how do I prep the existing deck? Do I seal it with paint? Because once the cap's on, I know that maintenance for the material down below, of course, we've been talking about moisture all morning long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want a problem where the womanized material is rotting on me and, you know, I got a nice looking deck, but I step out on it and fall through someday.
Or here's the other part, and where this is going to go on my end, Mark, is or one side of that composite deck, being the top side, stays wet all the time because it's new the Walmanized, and then the composite, the bottom side of that. So you've got one half of a piece of wood that's wet all the time because it can never dry out because the other stuff's laid over it, and then the bottom, which will be very dry. That wood is going to go back to trying to be a tree, and it's going to warp like crazy. So I'm not in favor of the overcoat liquid applied things on old worn out decks. I'm not in favor of a nice composite going over the top because it's the whole system that your wife will eventually not like. It's not whether or not the composite deck part is in good shape or not. Together, I am not in favor of trapping moisture in any construction assembly, period.
Right.
And that's kind of where the basis of your question is like, is this going to work? And it's like, it will, but I think if you read the warranty, the product quality will be good on the composite, but they will not put a warranty on the performance of the wood underneath it, which is going to be the Achilles heel, weak link, and the failure point.
Well, here's my next option then. Can I just take off that 2x Walmanized material and but see, it's on 2 foot centers. I'd have to somehow.
Yep.
It's a real mess. I'd have to frame it out somehow just to go with composite again, right?
Well, not really. You can put blocking in between there. You do have the structure to carry it, but you're going to put blocking on, 10 or 14 inch, 16. I mean, you've got to calculate this too, because if you do the composite's a handful. It is not wood. It's not very structural. You put it on diagonally. Now you're really full of trouble. And it gets longer and shorter. So I've seen composite decking, good quality stuff, nothing wrong with it, put on diagonally on the deck, and it literally, between the summertime and the wintertime, it leaned over in the summertime because the decking got longer and it racked the whole deck to a lean. And then in the wintertime, 6 months later, you go back out and the deck looks fine because it all got short again when it got cold. So you've got
that would be the worst of the two evils. Just go and get regular decking, composite decking material, rip off the Walmanized, and, build up the, my framing and everything and put that down.
Yeah, there are a few other options. There's a Tiger deck. There's a Paulope, but it's an Ipe, I-P-E. It's a South American hardwood. It sinks in water. Termites can't eat it. It's a little more costly than composite. But any of these easy-to-apply products generally are targeted toward the consumer, and they're not necessarily subject to a labor installation warranty, which is really the failure point on almost the entire industry. The products, for the most part, even when you have product failure, installation generally has some part in it. So it's, they're not taking any responsibility for the labor because it's a DIY product. And that's my main beef with all this stuff. The liquid applied deck coatings and.
Oh, it was terrible. It was terrible.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think you're heading toward the same sort of thing. I'm not going to really get right into it. But anytime any system.
The only other option, which I'm sure my wife would love to have, is go ahead and put the Walmanized down. Go ahead and put the composite down and everything like that, and then turn the open deck into a covered deck.
You can do that as long as you're keeping the moisture. But even when you get into a covered deck, you get blowing rain. You can get water. You can get wet decking 4 feet inside of that with an 8 foot ceiling. So even a covered deck isn't immune from all of this, because that's also where the hot sun hits too.
Right, I got you.
So now you get it really cold or really wet, and then you get it really hot and quickly dry, and now you've got Mother Nature doing her worst.
Yeah, I'll tell your listeners, well, I'm sure they hear it now, but we do live in what they call the Mississippi Valley, so that's why we got the moisture. Hey, thanks a lot, Scott.
Right on, brother. Thanks, Mark.
I think I'll just go. I just put regular composite boards down and be done with it.
Yeah. Anything that dries itself, you're going to be in better shape. And you can close down that 24-inch spacing with blocking as well.
Yeah, and one guy said, take the old tar roofing material that you paint mobile homes.
Uh-huh.
You can put that down first and then put that quick cap on, but I don't know.
No. That's not going to work. That's kind of a fake. You know, you're going to pretend that you're waterproofing that old wood, but it won't. Because still, the water is going to sit on top of that waterproofing underneath that composite, and around the edges, the water's going to roll around that waterproofing and eventually get to that decking again off your, the races warping and the same old stuff, just slower.
Yeah. Hey, one other thing that just came to my mind. I was a fireman for 30 years in St. Louis.
Right on. Thank you.
I don't know if, you know, there's different types of qualities of bathroom exhaust fans, but I saw a lot of fires with those exhaust fans where people just left them on constantly. You know, I don't think they're designed to just run constantly. I usually just run a dehumidifier in the bathroom.
Yeah. Well, they're supposed to be hard ducted to the exterior, so if you do get a fire, you're not going to set the house on fire. That's where I'd say 80% of the problem. They're doing that plastic flex stuff, and then you're just fanning the fire. So,
yeah, a lot of times they would catch fire and drop down, and they were lucky to drop right in the toilet and put the fire out. So that was nice. Well, hey, thanks for your show, and you do a great job, and I'll consider your suggestion there.
Right on, Mark. Good luck, my friend.
All right.
Right. Home improvement, Scott Mosby, KMOX. Sometimes you just have to noodle through this stuff. I mean, there are products are made to be sold. Assembled, professionally installed products are expected to perform. So beware as a DIY consumer, and this is not about the installation, of product claims, because generally you're not that trained in how to install that stuff. And if it fails, you know, the supplier didn't have any part in the installation. Whereas when you're dealing with a contractor, the guy that installs that stuff is generally, as we had a question about leaf shedding issues on a gutter in hour one, is the consumer expects performance when it's professionally installed. It's like, I don't care what you did to it. I want the water in the gutter, you know, the downspouts to carry it away, and I don't want water underneath my roof shingles when you're done. You know, I mean, those are all reasonable performance expectations. When you do the labor and the installation and the product supply, you have single source responsibility. And frankly, you know, in my world, I want that. I demand that. That's why we went into the design business years ago. Because as a contractor, we got paid the largest amount of money. We have the highest level of responsibility, yet we didn't get to vote on the product. We didn't get to vote on how it was installed. We didn't get to vote because we weren't the architect's designers. They were specifying, it's like, well, if I'm going to hold the warranty on this thing, by golly, I want to put it together to my best and highest quality of experience, knowledge, and product. That's why we are in the design build business. Because we can't help ourselves. We love this stuff. And, you know, we want the responsibility because we want a shot at getting it right. So keep in mind, a lot of these DIY products just dodge that whole installation responsibility and therefore warranty responsibility. And so, you know, you really, as consumers, you really have to kind of keep your eyes open for some of these new things, because if the pros aren't installing it, probably you as a DIY guy probably shouldn't either. Home improvement, Scott Mosby, KMOX. I'll get off my log here in my stump. But there's a lot to learn of if you're supplying a warranty as a professional. You're going to be involved in all that stuff. The product selection, the installation, the labor and labor training, therefore the warranty and the delivery and the performance. You know, if you're just nailing some stuff on, you know, if it goes on, you're good. But if it doesn't perform that way, you really don't hold and you can't hold the supplier accountable for that. Anyway, 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120, the Helitech Home Improvement Show on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
Oh, yeah, Scott Mosby it is. You know, I spent just the last 5 minutes looking for my glasses. Samantha, my lovely and helpful producer, said, oh, you mean the ones hooked on your shirt, on your chest? Yeah, those. I mean, bona fide, I promise. 6 minutes looking for my glasses, they're on me. Well, okay, now that your alternative, find somebody else to help you, although I may have blown the trust of the Kamwix listening crowd. Anyway, my glasses are back on. I can now see what I'm writing. Fortunately, it's not an interface between my brain and my mouth. That's already messed up enough. So you're on your own, Kamwix listeners. Let's go to the phones and see what's cooking here and talk to Mike. Hey, Mike, Scott here. Too much to handle right here. How can I help?
Thanks for answering my call. I've got two questions, both related to foundations and water.
Okay.
I've got an over 100-year-old home in Edwardsville that has a front, you walk out the front door onto a concrete porch, stoop, whatever you call it.
Okay.
It's about 5 foot square and about a foot and a half, the portion I can see out of the ground. The side toward the house, toward the door, has sunk down probably 3 inches down from the front part of it. The front part of it has 2 4-by-4 supports that hold up a little gable roof that covers the front door. Would it be safe to mud jack that up, or with that old foundation, am I asking for trouble to push in on the basement side? Or can they do that under controlled environment and not cause the pressure raising just the concrete stoop and not pushing in the basement wall?
That's a handful, because typically the concrete stoop will sit when we form those, or when it's built, that will sit on top of the foundation almost like a sill plate or a sole plate, just like a 2x4 laying on top. So it just kind of sits there, and usually there's some steel that ties it in so that when you pour that front porch stoop, it kind of hooks and ties and grabs onto the foundation. But the pivot point there is not a problem. The risk on this, Mike, if I'm following you correctly, is if they didn't put steel in there, or the steel rusted in 100 years, that's the problem, to where you start jacking up, lifting the 5 feet away from the foundation part. As it lifts up, it's the risk, in my experience, has been that 5x5 concrete slab slides off the foundation, not that it rotates, because the radius of that is, you're not going to push in, more than an eighth or 3/16 of an inch. So it's a limited risk on that part on the inside. And generally you can get down to the, foundation on the inside and get a sense of what's on the other side of that interior wise. The risk is that you lift that puppy up and that thing slides off the foundation and all of it hits the ground 18 inches lower. You follow that explanation?
I don't know. This is so old. I wonder if they really did much of a connection and just came on around later and poured. I don't know if it's poured concrete or if it's hollow. You can't tell from the outside if it's a hollow 5x5x2 foot piece of concrete, solid, or if it's a filled block type thing. Just put something to step out on. I'm guessing it might have had wood steps or something back in the old days. And somebody did a modernization and poured this little concrete thing to step out onto. Make it a little nicer, is my guess.
It could have been, but either way, whether it's wood, and we face this with front porch roofs too, where they settle down, and the risk is that as we jack it up, we lever it off the face of the building, and the building connection, kind of like a deck connected to the house, that connection is the failure point, whether it's wood or concrete. My answer is still the same. Your risk, in my opinion, is more that this whole thing falls off the house than it does that you lever it and do damage to interior walls of the house.
Okay, so you think it sounds like put new supports that come out at an angle onto the ground somewhere to support that roof up above, and then come in and jackhammer that out and figure out what to replace it with. And
yeah. You have two issues. The roof is, in my opinion, your biggest risk, because that's a wood-to-wood connection usually up above. We do that stuff all the time. Believe me, just for our own physical safety of our workers, we hold that up and take that very seriously. So we will do shoring next to the house of that roof structure when we start messing with it out there, unless the house is, less than 25, 30 years old. 100 years old, you can't count on anything other than Murphy's Law, and everything that can go wrong will go wrong.
Well, just as we just put, me and a friend just put siding on the front, and that front gable of that little roof over the porch, it had nothing to put nails into to hold the siding. We had to put we had to put some half inch plywood across what was there so we'd have something to screw vinyl to.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, don't count on anything. I mean, there's your roadmap. Whatever you think it is, it won't be. You really have to inspect this thing very carefully. So I would hold that roof up completely separately before I started lifting up any kind of floor structure.
Another quick question, if I might. A basement, of course, it's one of these basements where you have to duck your head to come in. But on one side of the house is the driveway. And it had, when I bought it, it had some old asphalt and stuff like that. It was much higher than the part next to the house. So I put when I got the house, I put new gutters on because it had water moisture issues in the basement. So I put new gutters on, got the water away from the house off the roof.
Okay.
I tore out all of the driveway, lowered it down to where, the cars come through. The track of the car is about 6 foot away from the wall. So I've got it sloped down to that to where the water flows.
Away. Nice.
So I slope that way to where the water goes on that side of the house down to the car tracks and then flows out to the road.
Okay.
Up close to the house, I had some extra EDPM rubber, so I put a 6 foot sheet of that down underneath the gravel just to keep any rain that falls on the gravel to be forced away from the house. But I still got a wet wall on that side of the house. It's wet to the touch. The paint that the previous owner had put on the basement wall has come off. It just looks really awful down there and is very moist. I run a dehumidifier in the basement constantly just to keep the moisture down to a decent level. But the friend that helped me do the siding, he does some contracting stuff, and he suggested, although not water type stuff, he does siding, windows, etc. But he said that he would pour asphalt on that, making sure it's sloped away from the house, and that would take care of the water problem. But I don't want to do that first and then have a problem where I got to tear out along the foundation and fix something on the exterior of the foundation wall.
Hang on a minute, Mike. Hang on a minute. You're acting like you can keep the water out of that concrete. You can't. I want you to do some research on a rising damp, D-A-M-P, a rising damp. The moisture from the soil around that foundation will continue to hydrate that wall. The water in the soil. So
doing a dry lock paint on the inside, you don't think would help the dryness in the basement? I got to do something bigger than that.
Well, just no, that will help because you will put a barrier between the inside of the foundation and the foundation. But in my opinion, you cannot stop that concrete foundation, a 100-year-old concrete foundation, from being humidified or wetted by the moisture in the soil that it touches.
Where you're sitting?
Okay.
You follow that?
Yeah, I got to move my truck. Yeah.
Mike, I'm going to have to go now, but do research on rising damp, RISINGDAMP, and it's very common. Basically, the water will come into that concrete, never from the air, never from the top, never from the house. It just comes from under the ground.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you.
Okay, Mike. Good luck, my friend. Bye there. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, Camo X. Man, I can come at you with all kinds of weird stuff. You'll have to figure this out. You don't even know whether half of it's true or not. You know, the truth is, I don't either.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
Oh, yeah. Do you believe they give me 50,000 watts and I push all these buttons? Yeah. You should see what happens when I open my eyes. Sometimes I hit even the right buttons. Well, let's see what's cooking here and talk with Dennis. Hey, Dennis, good afternoon. Welcome to KMOX. How can I help, sir?
Hi, Scott. Thanks for taking my call. How are you?
I'm fantabulous. Happy Saturday, brother.
Thank you. You too. Here's my question, and it's more of a question than anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I have some, my hot and cold water lines are rigid copper, hard copper, and I'm getting some green corrosion / oxidation that's growing on the exterior of those pipes in my basement where I can see it. It's in the proximity of some galvanized fittings, so I think it's a chemical or molecular reaction with galvanized, is my guess.
Yep, probably right.
To set this up, I live in rural St. Clair County, and I'm on a deep well, so the water line that comes into my house is an inch Schedule 80 PVC, and then they screwed on a galvanized bell adapter to adapt it down, and then from that point on, it's rigid copper. And then it also goes down to a holding tank or a pressure bladder tank that has a galvanized union.
Right.
So within about 3 to 5 feet of those galvanized fittings, I have green corrosion growing on the exterior of the pipe. If I get further away from that, there is no corrosion. That's why I believe it's a reaction to the galvanized. My question is this. Is this something I should be concerned with, or is it purely cosmetic?
Yes, you should be concerned with it. It is a what's called those unions, the connectors that go from galvanized to copper. If they don't have a whole bunch of white stuff on it, they're what's called a dielectric, D-I-L-E-C-T-R, a dielectric, like dielectric.
Right.
And there's a plastic sleeve in between the copper and the iron so they don't ever touch. The issue is with a deep well, you've got all kinds of fantastic minerals that are coming through that, and they are creating a battery-like, just like the car battery you have, reaction.
Yep.
So you're seeing electrolysis or an electronic reaction between the minerals as well as the copper and the iron, and the water is the carrier between that. So you've got that, in my opinion, absolutely analyzed correctly. But the reason is mine to explain, and it's really that deep water minerals coming out of there. If you soften that water, remove some of those electrolytes inside that water or mineral deposits that are causing that stuff, you'll lessen that. But that green stuff on the outside is the byproduct of that electrical reaction of electrolysis.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the softener, because I do have a whole house water softener, and now that you say that, I don't have any of that corrosion beyond the softener. These are the pipes that go as it comes in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a couple of particulate filters, but it's all the plumbing prior to the softener that this is occurring on.
Yeah. And so, it should be. It's Mother Nature is, she's doing what Mother Nature does, you know.
If I, is it risky to scrub that off?
No, not on the outside. No, it's all cosmetic on the outside, but it will indicate what's going on inside.
Okay. Eventually, would I expect it to leak?
Yes, eventually, but it could be, it could be a year, could be 100 years, could be never.
Okay.
But,
this has been going on for a long time. The house is 20 years old, and this has been occurring, I'll say, probably 5 years after the home was built, and it just progressively gets worse. It's in that area, like it gets thicker, but it doesn't grow out further. It's just that area.
Prevention matters here, Dennis. In my world, at 20 years of corrosion like that, I'd change out those pipes.
Okay.
Because if you don't, it'll just, it'll happen on Christmas Eve or, the wrong time.
Do they make copper bell adapters and unions that I could remove those couple of galvanized pieces? As far as I know, those are the only two galvanized pieces in the whole water system, is that bell adapter, which adapts the Schedule 80 PVC to the copper and the union. Do they make those in copper?
Ooh, I don't know about the copper, but you can do Schedule 80 PVC into your copper. You don't need to have the iron there either.
Okay, they make adapters for that.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah, okay. I mean, Missouri American Water is messing around with all that stuff. So their pipes are Schedule, I don't know, whatever.
Right.
It's a gazillion,
Yeah, Schedule 1000 or something. Right,
right.
Okay, well, I could certainly do the plumbing part. In fact, I've done most of it myself, so I could cut all that out and let new hard copper in to replace all the corroded stuff, and I just need to find the proper adapters to adapt it and get rid of the galvanized parts. I think that will help. So.
Yeah, and that's a sourcing issue, because the difference between a union and a dielectric union is whether this occurs or not. So, you're just into... welcome to the plumber's world and why those guys have to be so deeply trained.
Yeah, I'm familiar with those unions when you describe that, and I'm 100% sure what I have is not that.
Yeah.
So, okay, very much. Very good. Thank you for your help.
All right, Dennis, take care.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Next up, let's talk to Dina. Hello, Dina Scott. I'm just Scott. I don't have a cool name like Dina. This is just Scott. How can I help you there, Dina?
Hey, Scott. We recently, within the last year, converted half of our garage into a room, which is about 12 by 25.
Okay.
And we had two vents put in, one at each end, and there's also a ceiling fan.
Okay.
Our problem is that during the summer months, when, like, just recently the temperature drops down at night at 60, 70, the air conditioner to the house does not run. And I run a oxygen concentrator in that room.
Mm-hmm.
So the room, like this morning, I woke up, it was like 78 degrees. Besides putting a window unit in for those particular times, is there any other solution available?
Well, one of the things you said indicates to me, and, you know, our HVAC pro, Todd, just blowing his mind here, the first guy that called in the first hour. The two vents you put in, I suspect, are only supplies.
One is a supply. One is also in the actual main ductwork.
For the return?
Yes. Okay. No, it's not in the return.
Well, my point is, does air blow out of both of those registers?
Yes.
Okay, those are both supply registers. You have no return in there.
There's a return that is right outside of the room, and the door is left open constantly.
Okay. Are both those supplies on the far side of the room? Not
one at one end, one at the other end.
Okay, you're underserved. For 12 by 25, I think you just don't have enough cubic feet of cooling going there. And you're
It stays cool in there. In fact, it's downright cold, like 68 degrees, until I turn the oxygen concentrator on.
Well, the oxygen concentrator may, and I'm not sure.
It puts out a lot of heat. Out a lot of heat.
Okay. So, I think there's your answer.
In 1 hour, it'll drop the temperature down to, it'll raise the temperature up like 2 to 3 degrees in just a short period of time.
Okay, well, either take that oxygen concentrator out of that room, put it on the other side by the return air, and run a longer line to you, or you're overloading the cooling capacity. That oxygen concentrator, it sounds like, is creating more heat than the AC can handle.
Well, that's the thing. The thermostat is upstairs in the main part of the house.
Yeah.
So that's why, what can you do on those nights that are, the air conditioner is not going to run and keep the room cool?
Yeah, a window unit would work great.
I'm worried about a window unit, though, because it's on the street level.
Well, yeah, that's a different issue, but the cooling question can be answered by a remote unit that has its own thermostat. You know, so by the thermostat being on the second floor so far away and all of that. Dina, I think you've got your arms around this thing. You've supplied all the info. You seem to understand. You just need more cooling control around that room.
So they have a convertible one. I heard it's on the floor that doesn't go in the window. Or they have a window unit. Which one is better?
The window unit, because it blows the heat outside. The portable unit, if it doesn't blow outside, it won't work.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Take
Thank
care.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye now. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby. Again, you're welcome to the world of the heating and cooling guy. How many people live here? How many windows do you have? How much heat do you gain? Which he's just trying, or she is trying, to figure out. How much cooling load do I need to supply? And once that oxygen concentrator fires up in Dina's world, it just more capacity needed. Here on KMOX.